Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children and adults of all ages, welcome inside the very latest edition of the Selby Is Godcast. I am TJ Zuppi. He is Zach Meisel. We are both from The Athletic, and we're about more than halfway through spring training. Not quite to the point where jobs are being decided and really getting down to it. But we're starting to maybe see some storylines emerge and maybe get some answers, right?
At least it's 2 weeks till opening day.
Starting to feel that way, Zach. It's starting to feel important. Okay, maybe it's not, but it is spring training, and for what it is, it's real baseball, kind of.
Yeah, and finally, a big offseason move by a Cleveland team. It only took until the NFL new NFL calendar year began for it to happen. Who would have thought, right?
Yeah, it is the talk of the spring training complex. Ironically, though, it's not actually the talk of the complex, but in trying to make it seem like no one wants to talk about it, everyone is talking about it. Does that make sense? It really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like the weather. The first 3 weeks of spring training every year, nobody wants to talk about the weather, but everybody only talks about the weather. There's nothing else to talk about. Every radio hit you do starts with them asking, what's the weather like down there? And you say, oh, well, I don't want to complain, but it's only 58 degrees and cloudy today, although I'm sure that's much better than what you've got at home. And they say, yeah, it's snowing here. And it's the same song and dance every day for a few weeks.
I'm glad we're pointing it out and spending time talking about it. I was in a tornado today as I was sitting watching Francisco Lindor, and the wind was blowing so hard that Anthony Kastrovitz from MLB.com was sitting next to me and behind the stands, behind home plate is where they have some set up, and he's trying to type on his computer. His computer starts blowing into his lap. And I'm not talking
Yeah,
like,
it's not what you want.
I'm not talking like the down a little bit. It started actually shifting into his lap. That's not what you want when you're sitting there trying to get some work done. And to sit there and my phone is almost blowing out of my hands as I'm trying to get pictures and video of Lindor. And while he did strike out twice, the wind wasn't as a result of his swing, so he can get that joke out of the way.
But how was his running? How was his calf?
You mean his jogging? His jogging down to first? His jogging out to the outfield? It was legitimately Jog Fest 2019 for Francisco Lindor, where it's like, okay, man, you're going to go out there. It's a controlled setting. And that's what they stressed like three times. Controlled setting where he's going to get three at-bats, yes, but he can't run to first. He can lightly jog down to first. He's going to play the position. He's going to go play shortstop. What's up, Linus? And he's going to be able to maybe jog out to get a cutoff throw. So it's not like he can do anything major, but it's a step forward. So that's sort of important.
You basically watched like the first day of NFL training camp. Like, yeah. They're not in pads yet. They're not going full go. There's dogs barking in the stands. And yeah, that's basically what it is. But I mean, he's got 2 weeks. It's going to be interesting. And we can debate this if you want. Like, you know, opening day's around the corner. You know it's going to be cold in Minneapolis and then in Cleveland and then in Detroit. Do you – obviously you don't rush him back, but
yeah.
Even if he's ready, do you put him out there?
I was just trying to figure out if I was like putting odds on it today, or at least the most likely scenario, where is he starts on the injured list or he starts on the opening day roster. I'm still leaning towards injured list for all the reasons you just pointed out, but – and again, I've seen Michael Brantley take like three games worth of at-bats and be like, nah, I'm ready, and then play on opening day. And Francisco Lindor isn't coming back off of surgery. It was a calf that was bothersome. I don't know that I have – if I'm putting a ton of money on it, I don't know that I'm comfortable either way. I know which way I feel like it's probably more likely. If I had to make a choice, I'm saying he's going to start on the injured list, but I've seen stranger things happen. I will say,
good show.
I will say today I asked Lindor if he he thought he was ready to make the jump to taking the training wheels off, where he could just let it go, where he could cut and run and have no limitations despite whatever the athletic trainer said. And he said, nope, I'm sticking to the plan. And it was almost like what you say to yourself to not let yourself get ahead of yourself. He was just echoing whatever they wanted him to say, just so it wouldn't be putting himself in a position where he truly is thinking about going out there 100% on the first day of actually getting into that game activity. That's not what you're looking for. That's not what you want.
Can you hear anything but the dog barking? I mean, this is amazing.
Well, the Browns did pull off a major trade, so here we go, Brownies. Here we go.
He's auditioning to be Swagger's replacement. Because you know John Dorsey's always looking for an upgrade. Anyway, you get it. Anyway, yeah.
Make sure you get at least a second and a fourth if you're going to have this transaction actually take place.
The thing is, so if he's not ready, and I could see some scenario where like he doesn't play in Minnesota, but then he comes back for the home opener. And then it's like, okay, so you're going to carry Max Moroff and Ryan Flaherty for three games, and then you're going to cut one of them. Like, I don't know. Like, it seems weird, but I kind of feel like that's what's going to happen.
I'm leaning, trying to project ahead now. I'm leaning toward the starting shortstop on opening day being Ryan Flaherty. As weird as that is, he's gotten the most opportunities, and he's gotten a lot of them here recently, where some starters are starting to get back-to-back days and build some more volume. He's getting a lot of it, and for whatever it's worth, and usually not much, he's hit okay in spring training, even today, contributing to the offense. I don't know what you really take away from that, other than he's trying to win a job, and the only thing you can do to impress is to go out and have success. But he is having some of it, and if you're trying to – we talk about this all the time. If you're trying to maximize depth as much as you can, then you hold on to the veterans on the minor league deals and send the guys down with options, because then within a week, once the rosters change, and they inevitably will, then you're kicking the veteran to the curb and bringing the guy up. Otherwise, you risk losing him. Not that I think anybody's going to lose a ton of sleep over Ryan Flaherty going elsewhere, if that's the case. But we've talked about it at length with the bullpen, and it sort of fits the same MO if you're talking about position players, if Frankie's not on the opening day roster.
Yeah, I agree. And it makes no sense to, I mean, make sure he's 110%. Like, I don't know how many spring training games he needs to play in to feel comfortable. I know you compared it to Brantley, but I would take that number and double it, because he's only going to get a max of, I don't know, a week's worth of games maybe, right? And why not just let him play more, let him rest more? It's not that important to make sure he's ready in March.
Right, artificial deadline, all that kind of stuff. I get it. And speed and agility is a lot bigger part of Lindor's game that ever was for Brantley, at least the later stage of his career where he's at now. And we're also talking about a calf injury, so that's probably more problematic. I don't know, it's weird, because he's getting his at-bats and he's taking swings in the cages, so he's still getting that element of it. But just seeing him today, he says that he's treating today like day one of spring training for him. Well, if that's the case, he's not going to be ready in 2 weeks.
Hey, you're a month late, bro.
So I don't think the benefits there are there for them to rush him out there on opening day, other than just to say, hey, look, our lineup doesn't look quite as bad with him leading off or hitting second or whatever the hell he's going to end up doing.
Well, that's the thing is if he just skips the opening series in Minnesota, then you don't have to come back home and have Tom Hamilton announce Ryan Flaherty as the starting shortstop in front of a sold-out crowd, probably the only sellout you're going to have until June. So, that's the way I would put my money if I had to bet on this. that he misses three games. And maybe it won't even be three games because who knows what the weather will be like in Minneapolis. That's, yes, only two more weeks, then we can start talking about weather again every single day. I think that's what happened. Brantley did it. Was it last year? I think he did it where he missed. I don't remember where they opened.
They all blend together, dude. At this point.
Yeah, it was three straight years.
It was just weird. It was weird to be over at the minor league fields today for the Michael Brantley Invitational because it's about this time every spring that we all meet over there on field two or field three, whatever the number is.
They should name what that field after.
Oh, my gosh. Between Cody Anderson's hallway and Michael Brantley Field, it would make a lot of sense. I mean, we've been in that position before where we're watching these guys start to build their way back up, but the benefit there, it's not. There's nothing other than the Twins are your biggest competition and you play them a certain amount of times and you want to win as many games against them as possible. Outside of all of that, I think I'll take the longevity of the season over rushing him back for opening day. The only reason why I don't rule it out completely is just because Lindor is a physical freak. And I guess I can't – I mean, between him and also seeing Bradley Zimmer, who wasn't even supposed to be sniffing game action until June or July, and he's out there taking at-bats in a minor league game too, between those two, it's I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I just don't feel like the best-case scenario is going to be the one that sees them playing sooner than later. It's just taking a more patient approach I think is the smarter play.
Well, and Zimmer still needs to go to AAA and figure out his swing, I think. I mean, people forget, like, the dude is immensely talented and he's got some traits that could make him such a valuable player, but you can't strike out in 40% of your trips to the plate. And that's what he was doing last year and got demoted to AAA and then got hurt. So I think this needs to be a smart progression. I don't think you just throw him back in against major league pitching right away. I want to see him make some changes with the swing, let it show in AAA that it can work for a little bit. And then if you still have a need out there in the outfield, and Lord knows you probably will, then bring him up. Because also it would be interesting to see an outfield defense with like Zimmer, Martin, and anyone. I mean, Greg Allen in right field, Jesus. Like, I don't think there would be any fly ball base hits to the outfield. But
it's amazing.
I think that's a longer process than people might realize.
It's amazing, even in short sample sizes, seeing the difference in outfield defense this spring compared to what we watched last year and really even years past. In center field, of course, Leonis Martin is the benefit of having an above average center fielder over a full season. I know when Tyler Naquin was contributing an 850, 875 OPS, you sort of live with some of the deficiencies in center field. But when you look at the number of defensive runs saved or essentially given away because of them finishing in the negatives, and then even forget just putting it at average and then take that another step forward where you're having a guy out there that's actually catching significant amounts of balls above average, that is going to be pretty noticeable, I think, pretty quickly the more he plays out there.
Yeah. And that's going to help the pitching staff too. That's why the pitching staff has led the league in WAR the last 2 years, and I think they can be better in 2019 than they were. Even if Corey Kluber shows a little bit of age, you know, we know what Bauer can do. Carrasco is as consistent as they come. Clevinger made strides last year. You wrote this week about Shane Bieber, his changeup, something he's focused on a ton over the offseason. People we've talked to think Bieber is just super talented and smart and valuable for the Indians. And you add that in, and then the better defensive lineup you have, that's like, we can criticize the Indians and their offseason and their spending and front office decisions and managerial decisions and roster moves and everything we want. And we could talk about what they don't have, and we'd be remiss not to mention and stress they have such a talented rotation that still has, like, room to reach a higher ceiling. And I think that defense, especially in the outfield, plays into that.
So we sat down today with Mike Chernoff, GM, and you know, you listen to the audio, and we're going through just peppering questions. You know, what do you think about this? What do you think about this guy's spring? You guys went in this direction. How do you feel so far about it? Bullpen, shortstop, young outfielder. I mean, the whole shebang. And we get about 15 minutes in, and I think it was Andre Knott brings it up, and he says, "Hey, by the way, we haven't even mentioned a single starter in your rotation yet. And the reason why we haven't done it is because we all already realize they're good, and we really don't need you to say that they're good. But I guess we've got 15 minutes in. I'll bring up something about the rotation and what you've seen so far." And it did strike me in that moment that how many other teams can be in that position where the GM comes in the room and you start running through things that are either things you didn't expect that are positive, things that are negative, glaring weaknesses, all those things. And you get 15 minutes into your conversation and realize you haven't brought up the starting rotation because we just expect they're going to be masterful. That's a, for all the deficiencies of the roster and all the things they don't have, that's a hell of a thing to have, the starting five that they've accumulated.
Yeah, and I think Bieber is the guy who is probably the most intriguing, just to see him tap into that potential. And you know, he had the great strikeout to walk ratio last year. I think there's room for improvement too. I think he can walk even fewer guys. You know, with that changeup now, maybe he strikes out more guys. Just from talking to him earlier this spring, he seemed a lot more comfortable. This is his first big league spring training. Terry Francona has talked numerous times about just how Bieber just looks bigger. He looks older. He looks like he fits more. Just what were your takeaways talking to him, especially for a long time, about the changeup and kind of the things he tried to figure out over the winter?
Yeah, I think the first thing is confidence. The guy just – not only does he look like he belongs, and based on his performance, it looked like he belonged on the field, but he talks like he belongs too. And you already know he's smart, and that'll play into his success too, because he's going to learn for all the glowing things we talked about and have written about him. He also got beat around a little bit with his fastball, and at times the changeup was kind of sucky last year. That's why he focused a lot on trying to get better, because he wanted to make that better in addition to making his fastball better and being less predictable. But there are certain things about pitching he's going to have to learn, like sequencing his pitches better, not being so predictable, not going first pitch strike 60% of the time, and not falling behind and going 70% fastball. Little things that a guy's going to pick up when he's more than 23 years old. But the fact that he did what he did last year and didn't even have a reputation of being a giant swing and miss guy, but the slider, the breaking ball really worked well for him as far as getting whiffs. And we knew he was a guy that doesn't walk anybody, but I think even getting to be in a place where he knows when he can, that's not the right term, but when he can essentially waste the pitch, when he can use his fastball strategically outside the strike zone to set up pitches within the strike zone and pitching backwards and all the things that a guy just learns as he gains experience. That's going to be fun, because we've seen when he came up and jumping up two levels and didn't have a lot of a track record, didn't have a major league spring training under his belt, and he came up and looked like he belonged. And if he's going to continue on that path, we've talked about it before, I think it's very feasible to believe that he's going to take strides similar to what Clevinger did in 2017. That's kind of the way that I've thought about it, and I've sort of phrased it, that I think he's going to take that sort of step forward where he's not going to look like a front of the rotation guy. I don't know that he'll ever be that, but I think despite the fact that he'll be labeled the number five, I think he'll be pitching more like a three or a four this year.
Yeah. I mean, just the knowledge you can soak up to being around that group. I know he and Trevor Bauer have talked. Bauer's talked to a lot of guys on staff. And it's, you know, the information sharing helps too. And it goes back to when Mickey Callaway was here and Josh Tomlin was here, and they all started watching each other's bullpen sessions, right? All five starters would gather in the bullpen, and you'd watch whoever was throwing their side that day. And it wasn't like some mind-blowing thing. It wasn't this huge change in instruction, but it was just, first of all, like, to bond and to share information. And if anyone saw anything and had any advice, perfect chance to throw it out there. And I think that's fostered this environment that is helpful and beneficial to all these guys and still goes on today. And you've got five bona fide starters. And I know the Indians have had a good rotation for a while, but you do often still have question marks about the back ends, especially, like, I remember a couple years ago we were debating whether it would be like Zach McAllister or TJ House or Danny Salazar for the end of the rotation. And, you know, you'd still cycle through, like, there's a chance if these guys stay healthy, like, I don't know why you would need to deviate from any of them, right? And so finally you have depth, because you also have guys who are going to end up at AAA, and like it's a nice spot to be in, because it's, if you have a bad rotation, your team goes south so quickly during the season. And I think the Indians are finally going to have some competition in the division, so it's critical that they have that stability in the rotation, because it goes a long way.
Well, that, and they have still so many question marks in the bullpen.
Yep.
Which we've talked about. I think that they'll be good enough to be at least an average bullpen. Compared to last year, average is more than acceptable, but it's not a great bullpen. It could be that if Danny Salazar picks up a ball and nothing bad happens.
Who?
He throws it towards the mound and nothing bad, or towards the plate and nothing bad happens. And then he gets the ball back from the catcher, gets back on the rubber and does it again and nothing bad happens. Provided all of that happens multiple times in a row for multiple months, then maybe he emerges as a filthy back end bullpen guy. But there's not a lot of surefire options back there. So they're going to be leaning heavily on the rotation, at least initially, until somebody sort of steps up and seizes the seventh and eighth inning sort of role. And maybe that never happens. And maybe they'll continue to lean on their starters heavily. It's not ideal, but if you don't have a great bullpen, you better have a great rotation. And luckily they do have that.
I think John Edwards is going to get the first crack at the eighth inning. It's crazy to think that, but he's looked the part this spring. Granted, it's spring, but they love him. They loved him last year, and he's been lights out this spring. So who else is there? I mean, I'm sure it'll be some combination of a left-hander, whether it's Oliver Perez or Tyler Olson. But, like, I think John Edwards is going to be up there. I think, like, Simber and Goody and, you know, if Clippard's healthy, like, I don't know. I still think there's potential in the bullpen, and I think, like, John Edwards is going to get a chance, and if, you know, he throws mid-90s, like, maybe he takes it and runs with it, and then maybe that's settled, and then maybe everything else becomes easier to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, they have enough depth guys where they'll be able to find plenty of middle relievers. It's just a question of, are any of them ever going to step up to be the eighth inning guy? If you had to pick one right now that looks like, I guess there's enough unknown there that you think that there's more of a ceiling than we've seen before. Like, I have a pretty strong opinion, or a pretty solid idea, of what Tyler Clippard is going to be. We've seen a little bit of a track record with the Marlins with Nick Whitgren or Alex Wilson. I would be supremely shocked if one of those guys comes here and turns into, at this stage in their career, a lot more than what they've been in the past. John Edwards, because he's been hurt and he's rehabbed and his life has taken him all sorts of different places, we don't really know yet. We've seen a small glimpse. You see some of the data that is semi-intriguing, and we see the Indians raving about him, but I don't know. I have no idea what he's going to be, which is both, I'm sure for them, exciting and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, I just I would rank the lineup a more concerning pressing issue to me. And then I would say bullpen after that. And then I would say like 7 billion other things, and then the rotation. So
is it weird that I look at the lineup and I think, and I'm already more excited about what the lineup and this is partially because of Lindor, but I mean, forget about that for a second. I am more excited about what the lineup might look like in June and July than what it's going to look like at the outset. Like,
well, why is that? What's going to change?
I think that they'll, at the beginning of the season, you'll probably see more of a veteran presence. Maybe it's Hanley making the team. Maybe it's Matt Joyce making the team. Maybe it's, we talked about Ryan Flaherty. I think you'll see some veterans earn the jobs. Maybe Trace Thompson, which would be completely shocking considering I didn't even remotely think he had a shot at making the opening day roster. And now I think he's got as good a chance to be the platoon right-handed hitting outfielder as anybody. But I'm thinking ahead to what continues to happen with Oscar Mercado. What
do you want to just talk about your man crush while we're on the topic? With
Daniel Johnson, two guys that have looked really good this spring. I don't want to give it all away because I'm going to be writing about it in the next day or so. But Oscar Mercado is there are reasons why his offense looks better this spring. It's because that's what he focused on. He made some changes.
Why don't they make the whole plane out of what you focus on?
Well, it would be nice if everybody just – if all of everyone being in the best shape of their life resulted in pleasant performance once the season started. It doesn't always happen like that. But I think that there – when you have a guy that comes up, in Mercado's case, is trying to make a team and he's a young guy and he has a good spring, and usually you go, okay, well, congratulations, good job. Thumbs up, dude. I'm glad it's good for your confidence. I don't know that it's anything we can take anything really and run with it and make any definitive statements about your career. But when a guy makes significant or even slight off-season changes and then comes in and you have tangible evidence of those changes working, I think that's when it gets more exciting. And that's Mercado is a guy that spent time trying to, and you can just say it with me because the entire class knows by now, trying to drive the ball more consistently in the air and into the gaps. And what has he done so far this spring? He's driven the ball. I mean, that one he hit to center field over the fence was a massive blistering job to center field. I mean, that gets exciting when you're talking about a guy that plays above average defense, can steal you 40 bags. If he all of a sudden transforms into a guy that can do those things and hit you 20 bombs, now we're looking at a really exciting player.
Yeah, it's interesting because we saw Tyler Naquin hit his way onto the opening day roster in 2016. Yandy Diaz kind of did it one year. Like, it's possible to do. It has to be the right situation. I don't think this is the right situation because I think they're going to want to see this happen over a longer period of time and against more consistent pitching. I mean, in spring training, one day you're facing Zach Greinke and the next you're facing Zach Meisel. Like, it's all over the map. So that's my hunch. And also because if you let Mercado make the team and he gets off to a slow start, and then you got to pick one of a handful of guys from AAA. Like, it's messier if you go that route.
Well, you want don't you want him playing every day?
Wouldn't he be if he made the team or no?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think he would.
I think he'll be up at some point. I would say the same thing for Yu Chang. I think those guys are going to impact the team. And, you know, maybe this is the year they just get their feet wet in August and September. But they're probably, I mean, Leonis Martin's a free agent at the end of the year. Center field's going to be open. Bradley Zimmer will have a chance to take it. If not, and maybe even if he does, like, Oscar Mercado could be a starting outfielder next year for sure. So it's good, especially because, first of all, and I wrote this, who the hell even knows who the Indians gave up to get Mercado last fall? It happened on the day of the trade deadline, the same day they got Leonis Martin, and it flew under the radar. No one even knew it happened. No one had heard of any of the players involved.
No, so what happened, we call up to do the conference call with Chris Antonetti, and he goes, oh, by the way, before we get started, I just want to let you know we made another trade. We traded for this kid, Oscar Mercado, and the sound you heard is everyone frantically Googling who the hell that was.
We were in Tito's office in, I want to say we were in Minnesota, and Bart Swain, the PR guy, was standing in there to, we were using his phone for the conference call. I don't think Bart had known that this trade went down. And like, and so no one knew the people involved. We didn't really know much about Mercado except he was going to Columbus. So it was like, all right, well, maybe we have to worry about this guy in September, but that's it. But like that's, I mean, he had kind of a down year last year too. So, or at least when he got to Columbus, his numbers trailed off a bit. So it was like, all right, here's a guy who's going to compete in spring training, but like no one really thought this kid had a chance. And now you sit here after 2.5 weeks of games and it's like, all right, I think you can pencil this guy in to be impactful at some point. I don't know if it's an everyday role. I don't know if it's in 2019, but he's going to get a chance at some point.
And it's not like he was he had no prospect pedigree at all when they.
He was a second round pick.
He
was a good player.
And depending on what evaluations you looked at, there were a few sites that said kind of surprising. Maybe it's just mostly a roster crunch kind of thing where you get a guy that's 24 years old and needs to break into the major leagues and you want to maybe bring in some younger guys. And so you kind of flip one prospect for another. And that was sort of the situation with Mercado. But I mean, he's a guy that used to play shortstop. Now he's playing center field and he's adapting to that. But it's not like he was completely unknown there. I mean, I know there was a couple that have been high on him. I think Keith Law wrote some glowing things about him and ranked him pretty. He might be like the fifth, maybe even higher ranked prospect on the Indians, according to Keith Law. So it's not like it's just smoke and mirrors in the sky. You didn't know anything about showing up in spring training and right. All of a sudden you think he's good. To me, my belief that there might be something more in him is coming from conversations with him, learning about some of the changes that he's made. But also more than just trying to make those changes is seeing a guy that was already committed to that before he met with the Indians this offseason and is excited and all for those changes. And I think has the right attitude to try to implement those things. And on top of all that, he's having success. So you get the thing you can't quantify, the confidence of making a change and then having the results follow. And so I think all of those things combined make for a really intriguing player. I don't know that he's we were joking and maybe we were joking. I don't know. Maybe you were completely serious, but we were joking through text that the Indians just discovered their Byron Buxton. And it's like, okay, yeah, of course. It's funny to joke about those things. I don't know that he's going to be a star player, but I think they might've stumbled their way into a guy that could be like a 2 or 3 win guy for them down the road.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was joking, but it was like, well, if Buxton doesn't realize his potential and we haven't seen it for more than like a month or two and Mercado does, that's like, they're similarly gifted players. I think Buxton's ceiling is higher, but it's about who maximizes that potential, not who has it. So
thing that makes it easier to talk about or to get excited about a guy like Mercado or to see Daniel Johnson and say, oh, well, maybe the Indians weren't so silly for trading Gomes for this guy. The thing that probably makes that happen is the guys that are going to make the team in the outfield right now, not a lot of them are giving you anything to be excited about.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Tyler Naquin. Is he the opening day right fielder in your mind?
I think so. I still pencil him in there. But I mean, we haven't seen anything so far in spring training that leads you to believe he's going to have success. Not that if he was having tons of success, that would mean he's going to have it in the regular season too. But I haven't seen anything that's truly excitable when it comes to the guys that are playing in that are probably going to be in the opening day outfield right now, outside of Leonis Martin. I mean, I wrote about reasons why I think he's sort of a sleeper pick to be an above average offensive player this year. But in the corners, I mean, I don't know. Jake Bowers is probably going to be playing left field because I would imagine Hanley Ramirez is going to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like all signs are pointing in that direction. So I guess that leaves Naquin in right field, but I mean, he hasn't done anything to really seize that job, but at the same time, outside of the younger guys that probably aren't quite on the radar yet, nobody else has either. So it's Yeah, that comes back to what I was talking about. You almost get more excited about what this offense could look like in June when some of these younger guys get some more minor league experience under their belt and then are ready to ascend upon the major leagues than what it might look like on opening day.
Yeah, Naquin turns 28 next month. It's kind of put up or shut up time for him. And like 2016 seems like a long time ago. And that year, I don't know, he went on a crazy like power tear. And he was hitting every curveball into the right field seats. And I don't know. I don't know. I have no concept of what like a 150 game sample of Tyler Naquin would produce. And I have no reason to believe that it would be anything to get excited about either. So I think pressure's on, and the toughest thing, and the reason why, you know, Tito has pressure on him, why he's probably got more scruff on his face this spring than he ever has in the past is, okay, if you just say Naquin's our starting right fielder because he's ready for his chance, and you know the young guys we want to get more time in the minors, how long do you give a guy like that before you pull the plug, before you send him down? And you know, and if you do that, like, are you kind of closing the book on him in Cleveland? Because you can't, you know, there's no reason to call him back up then unless someone gets hurt. And even if someone gets hurt, it's like, is this really our best option? Should we trade for an outfielder? I mean, it's the interesting thing about this outfield situation is that everybody has they're a different point in their career. Like Martin is your center fielder. I don't know if he'll play every single day because he's really struggled against lefties, at least last year. But I think he's going to play more than just like a typical split platoon. And I'm with you. I think Jake Bowers is going to play left field. I think Hanley Ramirez will make the team. And like there will be some playing time for the fourth outfielder, whoever that is, like Greg Allen, who he's probably ready for a more pronounced role or at least to prove that he can play regularly. You've got Mercado knocking on the door, Zimmer trying to come back and knock on the door, Daniel Johnson knocking on the door, and Naquin in his position. It's like everyone's at these different points, and it's fun to watch. And it, you know, if you're Naquin and you've been sitting there waiting for Lonnie Chisenhall to get the hell out of here to limp out of Cleveland with his messed up calves, and he finally does, and you get your chance, and now, like, you can't seize that opportunity. Boy, what a waste of the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I know he came, well, even before coming to spring training fired up. I talked to him right when the playoffs were about to start. He's coming back off the hip procedure, and you know Tito joked about being shocked seeing him on the exercise bike almost immediately. And I talked to him before they did that scrimmage, and he actually played in that scrimmage that they had when they were trying to gear up for the Astros. That worked out well, and he was genuinely excited because he felt good finally and felt healthy, and he came to spring training and he was feeling healthy for the first time in a while.
He said it feels nice to feel nice.
Yeah. He's been banged up, and it was weird. You look, okay, you had a great 2016, and no matter whatever you thought about what he was defensively and how you would attack him with high fastballs and all those sorts of things, he still put up really good numbers, enough that you would go into 2017 and get more than a handful of plate appearances before you're automatically demoted, sent down, and essentially sent to Siberia for a while. It was really weird what happened to him in 2017 if you just looked at it from the outside. And there were reasons for that. Of course, Bradley Zimmer comes up and finally starts playing. But then last year he gets a little bit of an opportunity, but not a ton. Then he's hurt. And he comes back this year and he thinks, okay, as you said, he's got the opportunity in front of him. And as far as the numbers go, he hasn't run with it. So it's a weird spot for him. You're right. It is absolutely put up or shut up time for him. And we haven't seen enough positive outside of 2016, that really solid run that he had, especially in the first half, to make you believe that he's going to be significantly more than a guy that's just slightly above average against right-handed pitching in his career.
Yippee for that.
I mean, there's a spot for that, but it's not when you're looking at the rest of the offense and looking for where the offense is going to come from. It's probably not. We haven't seen any reason to believe that it's going to come significantly from right field with Tyler Naquin playing out there.
Yeah, the issue to me, I know everyone said, oh, the outfield is atrocious, that's why they're not going to go anywhere. And it isn't so much the outfield to me, because that's been plaguing them for years, really. It's the fact that I have no idea if Roberto Perez is going to be able to hit his weight this year. I have no idea if Jason Kipnis is going to bounce back. I have no idea how long Lindor is going to be out and if Max Moroff or Ryan Flaherty can do an adequate job filling in. I have no idea if Jose Ramirez is going to be able to avoid a major slump. I have no idea if Hanley Ramirez is, like, able to run the bases without needing a walker. Like, there are so many other question marks in the lineup, and that punctuates the question marks in the outfield. And that to me is the major issue here, because there are some talented guys in the outfield. I just don't know what the right equation is. I don't know who the right combination is, and I don't know who's going to break out in 2019. Like, it could be Oscar Mercado, and we might not find out that happens until August. Like,
right.
So it's the other holes in the lineup, I think, that make me more nervous. Just like, I don't think the outfield is anything great, but I think the fact that you have so many question marks in your lineup to begin with makes the outfield more pressing.
It's not even the perceived holes that are concerning. It's when you base your entire offensive production around three guys, and essentially two. It's going to be Lindor, Ramirez, and then Carlos Santana to a little lesser extent. But it's all about your two stars. When you do that, and they perform like stars, then okay, you can probably get by. But if for any reason Lindor has this injury linger, or he's not quite as special as he's been the last two, 3 years, same with Jose Ramirez. If that happens and either one of those guys takes a step back, even a slight step back, that's just going to make the rest of the issues more accented. You want to do a random Indian of the day?
Bring it on. Let's go.
All right. I don't think this one's going to be too difficult for you. We'll start with his age. He's currently 47, born February 20th, 1972. He played for the Indians. At the time, it was his age 31 season. I don't know that I can tell you what team he came over from, because it might give it away initially. But he was a right-handed hitting outfielder, and he played for the Indians in the 2003 season.
Ooh. Lee Stevens?
He's not. Lee Stevens was a left-handed hitting first baseman.
I know, and that's 2002. 2003, yes. Like...
weird year. Yeah, no, I mean, kidding.
You're kind of like me. We grew up with the 90s Indians, and it was awesome tuning in every day. And then 2002, like, I was too young to understand what was really happening. And especially when they started the season 11-1, it was like, hey, it's continuing, even though Robbie Alomar's not here and Matt Lawton's got a weird batting stance. And then, like, just the bottom dropped out, and it was like, what is this? Why is this so bad? And then Selby hit the grand slam, and now we have this podcast. But but then 2003 was like, they're gonna suck. They did suck, and you don't know who any of the players are. And so that's that year more than any other. I like don't know. There was like Earl Snyder and Zach Sorensen and like some really weirdos on that team, but I don't.
Well, I don't know about their personalities.
This is going
to
be
reason to call them weirdos.
This is going to be challenging.
In 2003, he played in 64 games for the Indians. Hit 8 home runs, slashed .271, .328, .433. That's an OPS of .761. And before you turn your nose up at that and poo-poo it, that's actually an OPS plus of .103. So he was 3% above average when he was with the Indians. I'm not telling you where they got him from. Well, I can tell you that they signed him as a free agent. I won't tell you what team he played for beforehand. But they signed him as a free agent January 14th, 2003, and they traded him.
Was that their most recent free agent signing?
Hey-o! July 18th, 2003, they traded him with Ricardo Rodriguez to the Texas Rangers for Ryan Ludwig. So that tells you that you owe a lot. The Indians fans owe a lot of the current team's success to this player, because we know Ryan Ludwig
turned into Corey Kluber. Well, Jake Westbrook turned into Corey Kluber, and Ryan Ludwig was in that trade. Wait, I'm confused.
Yeah, Ryan Ludwig was traded in the three-way trade between the Cardinals and Padres. The Padres sent Corey Kluber to the Indians. The Padres sent Nick Greenwood to the Cardinals, and the Indians sent Jake Westbrook to the Cardinals. So he was involved in the trade at one point. So sort of,
you know, I thought Ricardo Rodriguez had potential. I was very wrong about him.
Yes, we
are sold. So an outfielder traded with Ricardo Rodriguez for Ryan Ludwig.
Yes.
Huh. Shane Spencer?
It is Shane Spencer.
Wow. I forgot. So I didn't realize that was 03. And that's very forgettable era. Man, didn't he have like one awesome year with the Yankees?
This is like the Yankee MO is to bring up some young kid and he just obliterates the league in his first 30 games in that year. Like I always like Gary Sanchez is a similar sort of thing, although
Luke
Voit.
Well,
I also think he might be capable of having a better remaining career than Shane Spencer did. So I think of Shane Spencer coming up with the Yankees in 1998. He hit 10 bombs in 27 games, had a 1321 OPS. So I think of him as having probably a pretty decent Yankee career, right? After that, he played parts of 4 more years with the Yankees, and his OPS totals over those 4 years are 691, 789, 743, and 699. So over that stretch, he had an 11% worse OPS than league average for the Yankees and hit 33 home runs over 318 games. So he hit 10 in his first 27 games and only 33 over the next 318 for the Yankees before the Indians signed him.
Life comes at you fast.
Yeah, no kidding. But Shane Spencer is your former random Indian of the day. I was trying to look up what the Indians paid him. According to Baseball Reference, the Indians paid him $600,000 as a free agent.
That's $100,000 more than they spent on Juan Gonzalez's one at bat in 2005.
Yeah, that's true. Who then turned into Grady Sizemore, right? Didn't they call up Grady the next day?
Yeah, Grady replaced him, and the rest is history.
Yes. So Grady's ladies owe a debt of gratitude to Juan Gonzalez. Well, I had fun today, man. It was so much fun.
I would ask Linus if he has any final words, but he, of course, has barked himself to sleep.
You can subscribe to the podcast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify, Anchor, or wherever you listen to podcasts, really. Just search the Selby is Godcast, and you'll find us. And we thank all of you that have left 5-star reviews over there at Apple Podcasts as well. It helps us move up the rankings and get a little bit more notoriety so other Tribe fans can find us when they search for us. So it helps out everybody. Most notably, it helps us. And that's really who we care the most about, is it not?
Sure. How many times have you eaten Panda Express in Arizona?
I'm on 3. I was thinking about going to get it for dinner right now.
And you've been there less than a week. That's impressive.
Yeah, I think I'm on 2. I ate it the first day I was here, and then I skipped a day and had it the second day. I have not had it the third day yet. And I have a ways to catch up between you and Mandy Bell of MLB.com, who legitimately ate it every other day when you were out.
She's blown past me. I stopped at 5. I mixed it up, though. There's a Payway, P.F. Chang's. I got pretty sick of it, too. But I'm sure when I head back out there, no Panda is safe.
I will tell them to prepare for you. And until next week, we're out of here. See ya.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.